There was a lot of bullying in school for, you know, a lot of like pulling your eyes back and saying, you know, ching chong, Swiss cheese. I was like, what are you talking about? It was like a lot of, you know, racist kind of things that as a kid, you just kind of deal with. You don't even know. And for me, I was like, I don't belong here.
Eric Nam.
South Korean singer, dancer, actor, and global fashion icon.
K-pop artists are products of extreme torture.
There was a point where, you know, a lot of artists did not have smartphones. We were not allowed to have cell phones and talk to people and all that kind of stuff. I think that period is done. I think it's a very Western way of thinking about what K-pop is.
What is your skincare routine?
Uh-oh.
What do you spend on the most?
Flights.
And then how much would you be spending on flights per year?
Just to 100K maybe.
That's a lot. To put you in perspective, it's 85 lakhs. How much money do you make?
Hey man, I could tell you, but then I have to kill you.
K-pop, Korean skincare, Korean music, Korean automobile, Korean food, Korean technology. All of a sudden, why is Korea exploding so much around the world? That's what we tried to figure out in today's episode with Eric Nam, who's one of the biggest K-pop artists in the world. He was here in India to perform and we got a chance to speak to him and understand what are the cultural differences between America and Korea and India. Why K-pop music has become such a big thing. Do you think that K-pop is a really torturous industry where they pick up kids and try to train them to get a certain outcome? We asked about all of these theories, the reality, the dark side and the good side of K-pop around the world. So in today's episode, if you want to understand where the world is going next, from a teenage girl to a 60-year-old man, why are they actually following and loving this new culture? You need to watch this episode because there are a lot of opportunities, a lot of understanding and reality behind how to capture this new wave, which probably is set to become one of the biggest waves in the soft culture and pop culture in the world. But before you start the show, go subscribe to Rachamani Clips and Rachamani Short Channel because there we try to bring this long episode into small clips and in short amount of time, we try to make you a better leader and a better human being. Enjoy the show. I'm pretty excited and I am sure, like 99% of the people who are watching, they already know you.
I don't know. I mean, that'd be great. I hope so. But.
Yeah, but for the 1% people, yeah. Why don't you start with your story? Like, tell me, where were you born?
Yeah.
Give me like a download of stuff.
The full shabam. Yes. Okay. I was born in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
In the US. And I grew up there until college. I went to college in Boston. I went to Boston College. Mm-hmm. And then I got a job at Deloitte Consulting. So through the internship, I was a strategy operations business analyst.
At Deloitte?
Yeah.
Okay.
So doing consulting. But through college, you know, I was very ambitious. I did all the organizations and the internships from finance to startups to consulting. And then I did everything an Asian parent would want. You know, I got the grades, I got the job, everything.
And then What were you studying?
International studies. So okay. Political science kind of stuff. Probably was not the best student, but I worked really hard. I think that was the difference. But so I got the job and I thought about my future and I was like, I'm probably just going to be doing this job until, I don't know, I'm 30, 40 something. And something about that terrified me. It really scared me.
Okay.
That I could see my future so clearly and so predictably. And in the background, there were always these passions of mine that I never really had a chance to fully pursue because of, you know, family and societal pressures of what is right and how you should live. And so I said, I got the job. I'm going to take a year off. Deloitte, please let me take a year off. I'll come back in a year. And they said, sure, go for it. But all the while, I was like, if I ever get the chance to pursue music, I'm going to take this opportunity because that has always been like a passion of mine. And I got an email and it says, hey, would you like to come to Korea to audition for this TV show?
Okay.
go to Korea. I was on like this show called Weedan Tansang, which means the great birth of a star.
Yeah.
It's like The Voice meets X Factor meets, you know, with the talent competition shows. Mm. So I got to the top five and I signed a record deal. And then I finally quit my job at Deloitte and I said, I'm not going back. And I put out my first EP in 2013, January 23rd. So that's, God, what year is this?
2024.
So yeah,
11 years ago
was my first EP. So yeah. I started doing that. I started doing music, but in Korea, you have to do everything. So I did hosting, emceeing, TV,
everything
radio. Like you just have to be everywhere all the time.
Why?
It's a very small country. And so it's possible, but also like, if I look at, there are not many solo artists. There are a lot of idols or a lot of groups. And so I was always jealous because if you have five members in a group, one will do the acting, one will do the reality show, one will do radio. They kind of split it. Mm. As a solo artist, I have to do everything on my own. And I couldn't speak Korean very well. I was like really bad at Korean. So I was constantly stressed, constantly anxious, freaking out because I don't know what's happening. But I'm on TV and radio all the time. So I'm always making mistakes. Mm. So it was like a very anxiety inducing process for me. But my kind of big break, I think, was I started to interview a lot of Western celebrities who would come to Korea. So one of my first interviews was like Robert Downey Jr. from Iron Man.
Sweet.
Yeah. And I was like so nervous. I was like, this is Iron Man. Oh my God. But from there, it went to like, you know, Matt Damon, Paris Hilton, Will Smith, like Spider-Man, Jamie Foxx, like all these people in Korea, but then they would start flying me out to different parts of the world to meet with them. And I was like, oh, this is something that I could be really good at and build my career off of. So I started to do a lot of TV, not just hosting, but doing reality shows and travel shows, food shows, cooking shows, just everything, and doing music at the same time. So all of that started to kind of go
together.
And I did that for, I'd say in Korea, I was in Korea for about 10 years. And then in 2020, my contract expired. And then I was like, I think I'm going to try to do stuff in the States, which led me to move to the States, be a fully independent musician, kind of just do everything with me and my small team of family and crew. And so we've been doing the music, we've been touring most of last year, most of this year, and doing film, TV stuff as well. So it's been a journey. Sorry, that was a very long introduction, but I'm trying to give you
the
Spark Notes edition.
Now we're going to make it long.
I love it.
Gazillion questions about it. But quick question, isn't it bad for a branding of a person? Because then people don't know you for one thing. Like people know you for 100 things and then they can't associate you with, oh, Eric is equals to this.
No, I think that's a very fair question. And to be honest, that was a big hurdle that I had. Like I didn't imagine that my interviews would become so popular. So there were at the time, like trending charts on like the main portals of Korea. And it was anytime I did one, I would just be on number one. Because it'd be Eric Nam interviewed who? And then it'd just be all these things of like, oh, really viral clips and millions of views and all that stuff. It was a challenge because for me, I wanted to just do music. But all of a sudden, the label and the company are like, oh, but he's starting to make a lot of money just doing TV.
Yeah.
Let's just put him on TV. And I was like, I came here to do music. I can't even speak Korean. Like, what am I doing on TV all the time? That was a very big frustrating part for me. So at one point I switched labels and the first album we put out, the EP we put out, they're like, let's take what we've always seen as potentially a negative branding for you as a musician and make it a positive. So we actually made the EP, called it Interview. And the first song is called Interview, and it's about getting to know somebody you're potentially interested in. And that's kind of how we did the entire thing. So we took...
Nice.
That, and I have to give credit to my A&R at the time. She's like, let's just think of it as like anything that we don't like, you don't like associated with that, we're going to make it positive through music. And that's kind of how we did it. And then from there, it was like, oh, the music's doing pretty well. And for a lot of people, they have a really hard time understanding and grasping that people have so many different sides and aspects to themselves.
Yeah.
Because people like boxes. They like to, like, this is very clear. You are an actor doing superhero. That's it. Even when we see, like, even when I see Robert Downey Jr. try to do like something very serious and cinematic, which he's great at.
Yeah.
In the back of my head, I'm just like, but that's Iron Man.
Exactly.
And so I completely understand that. But as of late, as of the past few years, I've tried to embrace that we can be so many things to so many different people. So I no longer have an issue with how do you see me? It's like, if you see me as a podcaster, because so many people see me as a podcaster, I'm like, that's fine. Like, if I'm checking that box for you, that's fine. For a lot of people, I'm going to be a touring musician that puts out really fun songs, pop songs. That's amazing. Some other people are going to see me for being a startup founder. That's fine too. They're all different aspects and sides to who I am. And instead of feeling frustrated by it, I try to think of it as like a superpower where I can utilize all those different parts together.
Interesting. That's a good perspective to have, because a lot of people don't like that they're being called everything and they're not one thing.
Yeah, so, I could see, because it makes you feel like you can't make up your mind.
Exactly.
But I maybe it's because I'm so ADHD scatterbrained anyways. I don't really care.
So talking about, we'll come to India later. You are a Korean in America, right? And you started your journey in Korea, but you were born and brought up in America in a Korean family. So you would be knowing a lot of cultural differences, right? So what are the cultural differences between America and Korea? Like, what have you noticed when it comes to becoming an artist, becoming a student, and just a kid growing up in two different countries?
I think for people, it's for me, I could speak to the Korean American experience, but I think for many kids of immigrants living around the world, we consistently live in a third culture, right? We are too, in my case, I was too Korean or too Asian to be considered American. In Korea, I'm too American to be considered Korean. So then you're like, where are you? Who am I? And I specifically remember when I was like 13 having this very difficult conversation with my dad. And I said, I don't know who I am or what I'm supposed to be or how I'm supposed to act, because there is no example of a Korean American in media in the US that I can look up to and say I could do that or be that either, you know? And so it was a very confusing upbringing. And, you know, there was a lot of bullying in school for, you know, a lot of like pulling your eyes back and saying, you know, they'd be like, are you Chinese or Japanese? I'm like, I'm Korean. It's like, oh, what is that? And ching chong, Swiss cheese. I was like, what are you talking about? It was like a lot of, you know, racist kind of things that as a kid, you just kind of deal with. You don't even know. And for me, I was like, I don't belong here. But then I get to Korea and I realize that I don't fit in there either, because I don't really speak the language well. America is a very central me, I kind of culture where I'm doing the best. I'm being number one. I need to look out for myself. Whereas I think most Asian countries, it's more about community. It's about we. Yes. It's about taking care of the people around you. And that was also a big cultural shift. And Korea is also very hierarchical with age or seniority or who started before you. And there's a lot of respect that's laid into the language, right?
Interesting. Tell me about this, that how is American audience different than Korean audience?
I can only speak to the Korean one, because I think Korean fans are very, very, they're very loving. They're very loyal and they care a lot. They care about you as a musician, but also as a person. So what do you stand for? But also, are you eating? Are you sleeping? Are you healthy? They're very caring. And so for me, as I had moments of a lot of difficulty in Korea adjusting, but really it was the fans that were always there for me and like carrying me through, because I would do a show or an event and they would show up and they always have like some letter or a gift or the right words to say, hey, like no matter what, like we're here for you. We care about you. That was for me personally. But then I also look at fan culture in generally in Korea that goes beyond that, is like, it's all about fandom for a lot of musicians, right? Mm. It's about like, are you part of a fan club? Who do you stan? Are you gonna go to the fan signing? Are you going to the taping of this? Did you get tickets to that? There's like a full culture around the groups or the artists that you love that I think is so special about Korea. When I look at that, and when I think a lot of K-pop fans look at that, it has translated internationally as well.
Yeah.
And so you see fans doing meetups and trying to, they get like the same merch and they'll do group orders from Korea to get the light sticks and the latest goods and learn the chants. And I think that's what makes K-pop such a special community, is because around the world, people are trying to be a part of that thing that started in Korea. And then you see, I think, more Western artists that see that and are trying to develop it into their own as well. So doing, again, fan clubs or special merch or albums in a way that Korea has really specialized. And so there are countless meetings with music executives and people who work in music who are always saying, like, how do you do it in K-pop? How can we learn from that and make it palatable to a more broader Western audience as well? Because it's something that's so special about Korea.
You know, I think what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, right? In Korea, the whole community, the whole fan and music and everybody focuses on family building in some sort. In America or in Western countries, till now, they've been focusing on individual excellence. And now, because they've seen like these bits from around the world that, okay, there are meetups, there's taping, there's private sessions, there's vlogs, there's fan, and then people line up to just buy the merch, all of that. So that small parts of building a community, it's actually becoming a rage, and that's what people want to become part of. So it's like, hey, I'm starting a family of certain values. This is what we stand for. You all are welcome to join. Is it like that?
You know, in when you put it that way, I think, yeah, it makes sense in that way. It is about community building. It's about, we call it fandoms, but it's about community. It's about family.
Tell me one thing. Why all of a sudden around the world, this K-pop is exploding? Like, and it's not just K-pop. It's Korea is exploding. The skincare is all around the world. There are two, I saw this in front of my eyes. There are two boutique shops. This is in Singapore.
Okay.
One, they were like, they both were right next to each other, like small boutique shops, skincare shops. They were both owned by same brand. One had Korean signs to it. One was normal. The Korean one was like 50% more expensive than this one, right? So people are choosing to go for Korean ones, right? The Korean skincare is just, like it has grown to another level. So Korean skincare is there. Then K-pop industry is there. All of a sudden, like, why? K-drama, movies are becoming, series are becoming, and then it's just going wild.
It is. It is.
So why do you think, why all of a sudden Korea is exploding?
I think it's like decades of effort. Like, I don't know the history. I don't know what or how it's been done. But what I can speak to is, I think, you know, it's been decades of effort of people who are trying to create really high quality things, be it electronics. You know, we have Samsung, we have LG, cars, Hyundai, Kia, Genesis. And then we have, like you're saying, skincare, music, movies, TV. Food is also massive right now.
Yeah, kimchi is becoming really big now.
Oh my gosh. But I think, I'm sure there's some sort of government intervention where they were like, let's invest into soft culture. Let's invest into these things that we know will have outsized impact and ROI on a global scale, and that's going to be through entertainment and things that people really enjoy to consume. I think that in some ways there was, I'm trying to think on like all my conversations, and if I'm just like kind of pulling, I think the pandemic, during the pandemic, a lot of people were stuck at home, and there are a lot of them are watching K-dramas, a lot of them are watching Korean music videos. And it kind of became this thing that got a lot of people hooked in. And once you start watching dramas, you want to try the food that they're eating. You want to drive the cars that they're driving. You want to do the skincare, because K-dramas are really showing, obviously, a very romantic, idealized version of it, but Korean life to people all around the world.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe perhaps there's like an interest of like, oh, I want to do that, or I want to take a part of it. So I'm going to try these small things, that's little affordable luxuries from Korea, to make my life better. And so one of the coolest things that I kind of had like aha moment was, people, everybody's like, I want to visit Korea. I want to come to Korea. Will you host me in Korea? Can we go out in Korea? Like all the time, every week, somebody's coming to Korea. And it clicked in my head. I was like, you know, when you're a kid and you watch Disney, like you want to go to Disney World.
Yeah.
Because all you've seen is like all the animations of, you know, Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and Pinocchio. And when you go to Disney World, it is like this place where everything is about Disney. That's Korea for everything K-drama, K-pop, K-related. So people love to go, and everybody that comes to Korea, or even when I go to Korea, I'm like, everybody's dressed so well. And everybody, like I walk around just like in hoodies and flip-flops, and people, can you please not do that? That is so American. Because everybody literally is always dressed and looking very good. It is just a thing. People are always astounded. They're like, everybody just looks good. It is something that I think
it's in the culture.
It's in the culture of like, if you're leaving the house, make sure you don't look like crap. Like, make sure you look decent.
Wow.
So
that's why you guys invest a lot on yourself.
That's why there's like, there's so many, you know, apps and sites and different businesses that are about fashion and consumption. Like, I think Koreans, as Koreans, we love to consume, like try new things. We're very experimental, and that's what keeps so many things, skincare, clothing, so many things are innovative because we're willing to try new things.
And then you guys don't age. So what, I want to ask you, I think this, all of your fans are going to love it.
Uh-oh.
What is your skincare routine?
Hey man, I could tell you, but then I have to kill you. I mean, I will say this, like, I have this skincare video. I think it's on like Harper's Bazaar or something. And it has like, I think almost 2 million views of me just doing my skincare video. And it's, people just love it. It's from 5 years ago. It's a little outdated, but it's, there's, Koreans have like, I remember there was a point in time where it was like, there's a 12 step Korean skincare routine. And I don't do all 10, but I do like as much as possible. And that's like the only thing that I think I can really think of.
What's the routine? Tell us.
So it's usually like a double cleanse. So it's like an oil cleanse and just a foam cleanse, right? And then there's a toner, an essence, maybe a serum if you like a serum. And then a cream. If you like eye cream, you can do eye cream. I haven't really done that. And then I like to do a facial oil because it keeps it very moisturized. And if you're going out, you put SPF on. So I guess it sounds like a lot. It's not that bad, guys. I promise. But
and you do that every day or twice
not
a day?
No. It really depends. Like today, I was getting my hair and makeup done. So it's like probably like 5 of those things. But...
And then before bed, you would have a routine as well, right? Like skincare, night routine and stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. I just...
So like 5 to 10 steps, depending on who you are and what your mood is, you do that.
Yeah. Because for me, when I first started, I was like, I'll just like clean my face and put on a lotion. But I realized that so much about breaking out and like skincare, it's like, is your face actually moisturized?
Yeah.
And is it dry? And if it is not moisturized, that's when you're going to get breakouts. And that's when you're going to get clogged pores and all that kind of stuff. And so once I realized I'm on TV all the time, I have to do this. I hated doing it. But once you get into a routine, you're done in like a minute. It's all I got to know.
A minute.
Yeah.
All right, guys. A minute. That's there. You know why I'm telling you this? Because I was fascinated by Korean skincare. And I was about to start a skincare brand.
Oh, yeah.
For that, I went to a few conferences around the world, exhibitions.
Okay.
Right? So I was in Turkey recently. And Turkey has this huge beauty exhibition. So from different parts of the world, people come. So there's a South Korean, which is... which is Southgate. There's South African, which is all about SPFs. Mm. And there's American, there's Australian, there's Canada. Like around the world, people are coming, right? And so everybody's promoting their products and talking about. And then there's Korea, South Korea stage,
yeah, right,
where there are like five pop-ups. Everyone else have like normal makeup, skincare, creams and this.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I enter South Korea, they have like derma rollers and injections. And then I am like, this just escalated too quickly.
Because, yeah.
Yeah. And so I asked this lady who was the sales representative there, right? I was like, why are you guys not selling skincare? Because your skincare is probably really famous. Mm. They're like, because we're past that.
Mm.
Like that's,
yeah.
Like that was for us 10 years ago. Yeah. Like what these guys are doing. We are way ahead.
Yeah.
So like derma rollers are becoming a household thing in South Korea.
It's true. I mean, even the LED masks, I've seen those 8-10 years ago. They're like only now I feel like starting to hit mass market in the US or something, but it's like they've been around forever. So again, Korea is very fast when it comes to innovation.
What are the three most surprising or amazing or weirdest skincare routines or treatments you've seen in Korea?
I mean, there's so many things. Like I'll go when I'm in Korea and I'll just go get a facial and they're like, you want to try this? I don't even know what it is. I have no idea. But like, it's like the newest, coolest thing. It's like, let's go. And they'll just do it. But like, I've never had the thing with like the blood or the peeling or anything like that. It's always been very simple. Like I just kind of go to sleep and when I'm sleeping, they just massage my face and I wake up. I'm like, I look great. But more than like crazy thing, I just remember when I first got to Korea, 2011, there was, at that time, it was like snail mucin and like snake venom. Like, I don't know what they're doing to it, but they're making face packs out of derivatives of that.
Really?
Which to me, I was like, that's so bizarre. And I was like, that sounds gross and I can't do it. But I tried the snail mucin. It's great. It's like so moisturizing. It is so like you feel so good when you do it. But from a non-Korean perspective, you're like, that's gross. But like, it works. The other thing that I think is really cool that I got done once, I actually did it in New York because again, so many of these products keep getting all over the world. It's like a scalp treatment.
Okay.
And so they'll take a camera to your scalp and then show you the condition of your scalp. It's like there's like a lot of, you know, dead skin or clogged pores or whatever. What we're going to do is we're going to give you a massage, melt away a lot of the clogged stuff. We're going to you put you in like a thing where it's like give you an alien head and they steam it. And then they put like all this other stuff. And then they at the end, it feels great. At the end, they show you and it's like your scalp looks like so clean. Because you think about it, it's like your skin. You do it for your face, you do it for the rest of your body. I guess you should do it for your scalp as well every once in a while. So that's been like the one thing I got once. I was like, I want to do it again.
Sounds cool. Yeah. I want to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about snake venom and snail. But I want to do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where in New York? Can you tell its name if you remember?
I'll send it to you. Okay. I got to find it, yeah.
Okay. I want to have like 2-3 last questions on Korea and specifically because you talked about BTS Army and you talked about BTS, right? They're ruling the charts around the world. There's BTS, there's Blackpink. I want to ask you from your perspective, what do you think, what is there in BTS that just made them really, really big around the world?
I mean, first of all, they're just great.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Like they're so talented. I think they're the choreography, the videos, the everything that they put out is at such a high level.
It's not even high level. Sometimes they would use a random shit and like one of the lead dancers is just tripping and falling from a stairs and that video will have like 23 million views.
They're obviously very talented and they put out great content. I think, and I've spoken on this, I think before in the past, I think the reason that BTS really connected was they were the ultimate underdog. When they started, they were the ultimate underdog. And I still remember, like, they had a really, really hard time getting to where they were. Like, they were doing shows for free in the States. They were doing, like, reality TV shows that were really difficult for them. They were working all the time. But there was something about them that you were just like, they're very talented and their songs are really good. And they're just the underdog. And they didn't have a lot of funding either. Like, I've heard stories of just like how difficult it was for them from a business perspective. And like, it was just really, really tough. I don't want to get into the details because I don't know the details and I don't want to be misquoted. But I know that it was like really, really hard for them. But when people see that effort and they see those qualities, those intangible qualities, I think there was like this initial wave of fan building that was done. When I look at it, particularly overseas in the States, there was like this natural like, oh, wow, there's something special. And then in Korea, they slowly started to come up as well. Like, I almost think of it as like, I could be wrong, but I think they started to have more heat internationally and then Korea started to follow. And then they started to just explode. And when I think about K-pop groups, this is not just BTS in specific, like specifically, but in groups, the reason so many people, I think, are watching, consuming K-pop is because it's not just the music. Like you were saying, it's the short clip of them falling over and being funny. But like we were talking about earlier, it's about community. It's about family. Because I think of a K-pop group and I feel like I'm watching my favorite reality show. Because all members have their own character.
Yeah.
They have their personality. They all play a role within that group of that microcosm that allows them to then ultimately put out a new album. But Korea does a great job. Those labels do a great job of showing that entire process of like, this is them training. This is them living together. This is them in the car going to schedules. They're live streaming. They're putting up selfies with like special things that show their personality. And I think a lot of fans enjoy watching how they all interact.
Have you heard these conspiracy theories where they say like in India and places in China, these large Korean labels, they hire like people to just keep playing songs on loop again and again and again.
I mean, I've heard of it, but I don't know. I mean, that's always been a rumor, not just Korean, it's everywhere. Like it's always been the thing. Even in the West, I think there was some artists in the past few years who were caught for that. And they just kind of got blacklisted because they're gaming the system. But I don't know.
But in the beginning, you need that. Like, so the justification of that person who wrote this interview was that it's completely fine because you're just making good music. But for it to reach people, other people need to feel that it's really being listened. Like a lot of people listen to music because they feel it's cool and other people also listening to it.
I think a lot of people listen to music because they don't, they're just like, oh, everybody says it's cool. Oh, it's cool.
Yeah.
Whereas if I think with movies, it's like, I didn't like it. You know, it's very clear. But like with music, it's shorter. People are like, oh, this is like the coolest hit.
Exactly.
This is the, whatever. And I think music is also interesting where if you hear it enough times, it becomes, you, it gets in your head.
It gets to your head. Yes.
You know? And so that's always been like a struggle of like, there's so much content out there in the world now. How do you break through? And I don't, bro, I honestly, I don't know. If you have an answer, please let me know because I need to figure that out as well.
Meme marketing so is the stuff. Answer.
Okay. We're going to just do that. Just make a ton of memes and put my songs on it.
But they do that. Like I have a friend who runs one of the largest meme companies in India.
Really?
Yeah. And a lot of labels and especially Bollywood movies, they have large budgets. They pay him to run music on different pieces of content and memes for 2-3 months so that it gets to everybody's head and then people start loving it.
Got it.
Like, it's a thing. I know. So he was one of the people who got the mandate for, there's a movie called Animal. Have you heard of it? So in India, there was a movie called Animal, which became really, really hit.
Got it.
It became big. And at a point when the movie was, I think it was a recent one, Spotify number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all 5 songs were from that one movie.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and he was one of the 10, 11 meme companies who got the mandate. And this one guy got a mandate for $1.3 million to spend in span of 60 days just on memes.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But that's, you know what? That's like the reality of marketing these days, I feel, right? Like, I don't think people wouldn't love to know that, but it's so many things are just like companies have these massive marketing. Movies, like that's the thing about movies, like they spend more on marketing than the production oftentimes. Yeah. And so that's now we know where it's going.
Exactly. Yeah, because for an independent artist or just like a single crew pop star, $1 million for 30 days marketing is fucking a lot of money.
It's insane.
It's insane, right? But for movies, like another million, there you go.
Yeah. It's insane. And I think that's why it's like, when I first became independent, that was like my big thing. I was like, if you support, like, people are always like, I listen to your music. I'm like, thank you. I appreciate it, obviously. But it really, for an independent artist, it's really hard to make the numbers work oftentimes. Mm.
I just want to take this moment and tell everybody that recently in India, even after though there was these large Bollywood movies pumping in money to make sure their songs pop up, one of my friends, I'm so proud to tell this, he is an independent artist. His name is Anuv Jain.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was just listening to a song earlier.
Oh.
Really good.
Yeah, right? He hit number one.
Congratulations.
As an independent.
Right? I mean, that's massive.
That's massive. He's in top charts of Spotify, Apple. He hit like Apple number one in the country. Massive. That's insane.
Yeah.
You know, K-pop is one of these rare industries where people focus on everything. You got to look the certain way. You got to talk the certain way. The visual identity, the branding, the positioning, the social.
Yeah.
Like everything has to be so curated.
Yeah.
And it looks perfect. And I'm 100% sure, and I think everybody knows this, not everything of it is organic. You have to curate that. Right. Does that also mean, like, it's out there in public actually as well, right? That K-pop artists are products of extreme torture.
Oh.
Like there is some exploitative contracts and then things that kids at a very young age, these agencies spot these kids, then they take them, then they keep them super disciplined in a certain way. Have you?
I don't think of it that way. Because as much as there is like a lot of curation, I think, especially in recent years, it's become a lot more of like respecting the artist and understanding that if your artists are happy and healthy, you're going to have, you know, from a purely business perspective, the healthier and the happier your artist is, the better chance that you have of going long run, making more money for a label or a management company. So I think that's like kind of a shift in mentality that has had to happen as K-pop has grown. I think the other thing is people have approached me so many times, like, I want to do a documentary about the dark side of K-pop and I want you to be in. I was like, I'm not doing that. Because that is I think it's a very Western way of thinking about what K-pop is. I don't think kids are being dragged into a training facility to like dance for however long they're dancing. There is a general interest of, I want to be a performer. I want to be a K-pop star.
Yeah.
And it is of hopefully, I think, free will and choosing to say, mom and dad, can I not go to school and go train to be potentially a K-pop star? That's a very big decision that you have to make with your parents and all these types of things. And there is obviously a lot of training that goes into it, but I think that's why K-pop artists are so skilled technically as vocalists, as dancers, as actors, as so many things, is because they have received education in ways that most people have not.
True.
You could look at it and say, oh, well, you know, they're spending all their time in training. It's like, yeah, most people spend their time in school learning about biology and mitochondria. I'm never going to use that, right? If you're going to tell me I can go to this dance school and like learn how to dance and I can become a dancer, I'm probably going to do that. Yeah. So I think it's really about choice and saying, I'm going to put 10,000 hours into my training so I have the best shot at becoming the next BTS or the Blackpink.
Yeah.
So I think that's like, that's always what I say. I was like, I don't think people are getting tortured in that way. If you really don't want to do it, you're going to quit.
True.
You know, once you've debuted, there was a point where, you know, a lot of artists did not have smartphones. We were not allowed to have cell phones and talk to people and all that kind of stuff. I think that period is done. I think it's over with. Again, coming back to like happy, healthy artists are the best thing to have.
Tell me one of your strengths on stages and one of your weaknesses on stages so that everybody knows that, okay, if he did that, yeah. We know he's nervous.
Oh, one of my strengths is...
at the stage.
I'm trying to think.
Like, what are you really confident about us? A moment where you know that you'll get the audience.
I think there are a few songs where we're singing and then we start dancing.
Okay.
When we start, I'm not the strongest technical dancer, but I have a good time. And I think that's what people are like. He's not a BTS idol, like just doing like the craziest moves, but I'm having fun just watching him. And like, I want to dance too. When I see other people start to dance and do that, then I'm like, okay, we're good.
Now we're good.
So that's what a lot of people like, I didn't know your stuff. I came to the show, but like, I just had a really good time. And the other strength is I talk a lot. I probably won't talk at a festival because it's hard to do festival talking. But during my shows, I talk a lot and I crack a lot of jokes and I'm very sarcastic.
Oh.
And so a lot of people were like, I just watch like a comedy show / concert. And that's like a strength.
Oh, so you would do like the crowd work.
Yeah. I just like, I work with the crowd. I file with the crowd. A weakness is sometimes when I get really nervous, I start to overthink. I'm like, what are the words? Oh shit. What are the words? Oh no. What am I doing? And then I just start to like have a mini like panic attack. And you'll see me just like forget a word or two. And that's because I'm overthinking. I'm like, should I go to that side of the stage? Should I go to that side of the stage? Which part of the crowd has a better reaction? I want to get their energy. And as I start thinking, I can miss some lyrics. I can miss a move. But it happens. Yeah. That's also normal. The thrill of doing a live show.
So now if you miss out a move or a word, then your people and your fans know that, okay, they just need to start dancing like you so that you get back in confidence again.
Exactly. Right? They're like, hey, it happens. Let's just do it.
Last question. We ask this to everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. How much money do you make?
Oh, man. For real?
Yeah, yeah.
I'd say, I'm trying to think the numbers here. Oh my God, I'm so bad at math.
You're Asian, please. We gotta live by stereotypes.
Trying to break stereotypes, guys. I'd say, let's say like 50% or 60% is gonna be touring. I'd say like 20% of that is gonna be merch.
So 40% is just shows, 20% is merch. What next?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Appearances, just like private events.
Cut ribbons, be there, chief guest.
Do that, maybe sing a few songs, host a thing.
5-10%?
That's going to be 10%, I'd say. Okay. Brands is going to be 25%, maybe, something like that.
Okay.
What is that? What are we at?
Yeah, so almost there. Like, is there anything?
And then royalties? There's like royalties, publishing. That's like a small 5%. Maybe.
What, as an artist, what do you spend on the most?
Flights.
Flights is the most expensive thing, but
by far.
But probably that would be paid by the people who are.
Well, I mean, it's part of the touring expenses.
Yeah.
It's
so also, you will take like a full package and then you would figure it out yourself.
Yeah. So like we have to figure out, but I spend so much on flights.
Okay.
Like an ungodly amount of money on flights.
That first. Then?
And then. Probably clothes.
Okay.
It's mostly for stage and then appearances. And then rent. Like it's not, oh no, never mind. It's like production of albums, right? Ooh. So album production can be very expensive. I think the songs can cost anywhere from, depending on who your producer is, from like, you know, if they're newer, it can be $3,000 to $5,000, maybe. If you're I know some mega star people who get charged $50,000 for a producer track. Yeah.
And then how much would you be spending on flights per year, let's say, a month? And how much on clothes? Give me one ballpark number and we saw it.
I'd say last year on flights, I know we spent at least like 75K, just to 100K maybe. Whoa. Just on flights.
Wow.
Just for, that's me. That's not including
my team.
That's
not the crew. Oh.
Including the team, it's like.
A lot.
Probably 150, 200K on flights.
Wow.
I'd imagine.
Wow. That's a lot. To put you in perspective, it's 85 lakhs.
It's insane. And so, but it's
85
like,
lakhs on yourself of flights. What were you like? You're charting private jets or something?
I've never flown a private jet in my life. But the reason is because I do a lot of flying between continents all the time.
Well, thank you so much for telling me all this. Actually, fuck, I forgot the last thing. I need to make you smell this.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to give me a real reaction because I'm nervous, actually. I've never...
Wait, is this new?
Yes.
Okay.
So...
I'm very sensitive about scents.
Oh, okay. So I would have given you like a very light one dish.
In the way that I'm a cologne maniac.
Oh.
I have a lot because I love them. All right.
Okay. So
I'm going to. Okay. Okay.
Is it bad? Okay.
They smell good.
Okay.
Thank God.
Okay.
I was nervous.
Same. I was nervous too.
Oh. But I like this one better.
Yeah. That's my favorite.
This one smells just very like man.
Yeah. Aftershave.
This one is a lot more complex.
Yeah.
And it has like, there's a fruitiness, there's a sweetness to it, but it's fresh and it's not overpoweringly sweet. There's enough of like the darker, deeper notes that make it like masculine with a little bit of freshness in it.
Yes.
So Blanco Legend.
Yeah.
Now you have to sponsor me. No, it's good. It smells good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Guess the price of this.
I think you probably like $80 US.
$80?
Yeah.
This was like $8-$10.
What?
Yeah. We just made it. So why I was nervous? Because we made it very India specific.
No, but it's. I feel like it's very universal.
So more than universal, what's really interesting in this, so we have added like a time lock technology, we're calling that. So that it doesn't evaporate in sun. Like all the other perfumes, because they have alcohol super high.
Yeah.
So it evaporates in the sun very quickly. So even if you wear like the really expensive ones, it'll disappear in like an hour.
Yeah.
This one won't disappear even in India. So that's what we added, and that's why it's flying
that's
off.
That's very smart.
It's becoming very big.
That's really cool. I didn't even think of that. Very smart.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you so much.
What are you doing in ARR for this?
Uh-huh. We got that.
What are you doing?
We actually just started like 6 months ago.
Okay.
And 6 months ago, so we're not spending much on marketing.
Mm.
We're doing it super organic right now.
Yeah.
We're doing only a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, last week it was Amazon number one. Bestsellers.
Wow.
Thank you so much,
thank
man.
You.
It was a pleasure
likewise
having you here. You're a fun person to talk to. I was super nervous this morning because I was like, how am I gonna hold conversation with a person of a different world, different field, different country? And I was just fascinated by the stuff that you do and the industry you're in. So it was nervous. It was first for me. Thank you so much for making me super comfortable. I'm really happy that you did that.
This is your show.
But you made it. You made me just be myself.
Great.
So you're a great guest.
Well, thank you so much. I thank you for making time, even though I'm so busy and so nervous, though I could not tell. And for the thoughtful questions, I think it's always fun to share in culture and conversation and... I appreciate making time. Thank you so much.
Done. Nice meeting you.
Likewise. Legend.
I'm going to keep that. I'm using that as a commercial, guys. Thank you so much for watching this till the end. Let us know if you liked this episode, which is very different with an international artist. Do you want us to do such episodes more? If yes, let us know in the comments. If no, then let us know what can we improve, because we are trying to figure out and understand the new opportunities of tomorrow. We're trying to make you a better human being. We're trying to understand how can we live and love better. And with all of this, we are curious to know different people, different leaders, and different experts from different countries around the world. You know what to do. You need to share this episode with one person, because one conversation is enough to bring a positive change in someone's life. Thank you so much. Until the next episode, keep figuring out.